Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 68 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. It's been another great week in the gaming capital of the world, Indianapolis, Indiana. How's it going, Cody?
Very good. It is hellish out there. It's a triple-digit heat index.
Ridiculous. This is definitely the time to be sitting inside playing games with the air conditioner blowing on you.
That's right. Yeah. Pretty much every season has an excuse. In spring, it's too rainy. Summer, it's too hot. Fall, it's too...
leafy.
Beautiful.
It's just too beautiful.
Winter, it's too dang cold. But, you know, so there's always an excuse to play games.
Well, I mean, I know that that's typical, you know, gamer fat beard response right there. But no, it's too hot outside, it seriously, is to go outside. I'm not going outside.
It is too dang hot, yeah.
So we're going to sit in here and talk about games. What are we talking about this episode, Cody?
Well, strangely enough, we're going to be talking about gamer burnout.
Oh.
We're going to talk about when your passion for the hobby just isn't there, when you need a break, or you know, just things that can contribute to what we like to call gamer burnout.
We figure that's it's the perfect time of year to talk about that, seeing as we're getting ready to go into Gen Con.
Getting ready to binge.
Yeah. But no, we're just talking about some of the things that might contribute to possible gamer burnout and maybe what you can do to avoid it. So we got that. We also got a great review for you from for a game from Serlin Games called Yomi. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that before, just having played it, but we're going to give you a full review of how the rules work and just some full details on that guy. But as always, we're going to start with a rundown. You ready?
Let's do it. It's time for the rundown, but before we get into that, it is time to give our due penance, you might say our due homage to our great sponsor, Myriad Games, who sponsors Game On with Cody and John on behalf of friendly professional gaming stores everywhere.
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 Even where it's hot at like 115 degrees like it is here.
Even where it's, I don't think it's actually 115.
111 heat index yesterday,
well,
dude.
Heat index ain't real degrees.
All right. But anyway, whether it's hot or cold, rainy or sunny, Myriad Games sponsors us on behalf of all friendly professional game stores.
That's right. And if you don't want to experience gamer burnout, if you want to stretch your gaming dollar to its fullest extent, like both John and I would tell you to do, check out their MVP membership. So head on over to myriadgames.com. You can tailor a package just for you and tell them we sent you and get your membership started today.
And see, one other thing I want to say about Myriad is that every time a new hotness game comes out, lately I've been watching a lot of Jeremy Salinas, you know, Dragonstrike videos. He's just cranking those guys out, just, you know. And the game Battleship Galaxies just hit the street.
Right? It looks fun.
It does. And so I saw that video and I'm like, I gotta try this one out. And so just sent the email off to Dan and said, you know, here's what I, you know, want to see if I can pick up a copy of that. There wasn't any question in my mind that he was going to have it in stock.
He's never not had it.
Well, he's never not had it?
He's never not had a new hotness.
Oh, I thought you meant he's never not had Battleship Galaxies.
Like, oh, no.
12 years ago, he had it, even before it came out. But no, one thing you can always count on with Dan is that he is really connected to the gaming hobby, right? Mm-hmm. So the new stuff that comes out, it's not going to catch him by surprise. You're not going to send him an email for some new game and he's going to say, I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, that's a really good, a positive thing about him, because a lot of friendly local game stores, like some of the ones that we deal with,
yeah,
you know, the games that have been out 3 or 4 years, they've never heard of them before. Yeah. You know, even stuff that's relatively popular. So Dan is always going to be a great connection for you. So Myriad Games is a great place to you know, to get the new hotness, because he's involved. You know,
Dan is the grumpy old man with a shotgun on the great porch that is gaming. Nothing gets by him.
Well, there you go. Yeah, but he's grumpy with a smile.
Grumpy with a smile and with a shotgun of saving.
All right.
Anyway. And now here's the rundown. John, what have you been playing?
Okay, I've been playing quite a bit of stuff lately. Had another Game On game night in the last couple of weeks.
We did.
Look
at you with your notes.
I know. I've got
first time for everything.
Got them,
right?
On the iPod here. It's pretty cool, yeah. And so we got to play, I think I played three games. No, I played four games at the Game On game night. And so we started off the Game On game night with a game of Seven Wonders with the New Leaders expansion.
Indeed.
And this is the first time I'd played that. Our good buddy Jeremy Salinas brought his copy with the expansion and taught us how to play with that. And I really liked it. I didn't think it was... It's the Leaders expansion adds an additional 36 or so cards. Basically, three or four cards per player.
Yeah,
these are leaders cards that you can play at the beginning of every age that will give you certain bonuses and benefits. It gives you a way to sort of cater your strategy. You know, you sort of start off a game of Seven Wonders saying, "I'm gonna see if I can do green cards this time, or I'm gonna try to go do blue cards," and you try your best to go in a direction. The leaders cards will really help to focus you because it'll say that if you get a military victory, then you're going to get special points or special benefits or something like that. And there's a whole bunch of different leaders cards. I think there are 36 or so, something like that in the game. And so there's a separate round when you're going to select leader cards at the beginning, like a separate little draft at the beginning. And then as you play, you'll play out these leader cards. So I enjoyed it. The game also comes with the expansion comes with another wonder board, and I think some coin tokens for six value coins, because it's a little bit it raises the stakes a little bit more money involved. So I really enjoyed it. Cody, what did you think of Seven Wonders Leaders?
I thought it was implemented well. I'm not sure how much I would play with it, because I wouldn't do it if there were any new players.
No,
and I don't know how much it's necessary. Like, I thought it played well. I don't want to say the expansion was bad. I just don't know how necessary it is. I still get plenty of enjoyment out of the base game.
Yeah.
And the retail on it's $30, which I think is a little steep for just an expansion.
Yeah, I didn't pick it up at Origins, even though I could have, but I did go ahead and pick it up from Myriad this month, because I think I will play with it. Like you said, you don't want to play this with new players.
No.
You know, the game is... That's probably the only downside to Seven Wonders, is that I always seem to be playing it with a new person.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to teach that new person all of the card types and everything. But it's one of those ones that once someone gets one or two plays under their belt, you know, that thing flies, which is a great aspect of that game. The price point might be a little bit high, but I think it adds quite a bit to the game.
Yeah, if you play it a lot, I would recommend giving it a look. Otherwise, you know, give it a try. It may or may not be for you.
Yeah, because I'm not really an expansion guy. And the more I think about it, the more I don't even really like expansions to games. Because I feel like, I think I've said this before, why didn't you just go ahead and put it in the game to start off with? You know, why do we have to keep adding stuff on? It's hard for it not to seem like it's a money grab.
Yeah, like the Survive 5 and 6 player expansion.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on.
Yeah, couldn't we just made that way from the beginning? Yeah. So, but anyway, it's the bread and butter of a lot of game companies. So anyway, played that, then moved on to a game, an older game that we hadn't played in a while, called Witch's Brew. We've done a review on that on the show in episode...
Yep.
Yeah, I don't remember either. But this is a great card game that's nominated for the Spiel des Jahres a few years ago. And it's unique. I haven't really played anything that has this kind of interaction with it, where you're sort of claiming to be a particular role and then taking... resources so that you can brew potions and get points and that kind of stuff. But it's very interactive, and it's kind of a screw your neighbor game, but without even knowing who exactly you're screwing. So
yeah, it every time I play it, it's one of those that I keep meaning to put on the very short purchase list, because it's just like, I really like it every time I play it. So yeah. I really need just to pull the trigger and get this one in the collection.
Yeah, that one's fun. So I think we played a 4 or 5 player game of that, which is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Then we moved on to a new game, some more new hotness from Fantasy Flight, a board game called Black Gold. Once again, our sugar daddy Jeremy Salinas had a copy of it, and so we sat down with him and played that. This is apparently, I didn't realize this when we played it, a reprint of a game called Giganton or something like that, which is about
the Hoosier pronunciation.
Yeah, Giganton. But this is a game about building and oil derricks in, I guess, Texas or someplace where there's oil, and then harvesting that oil and then selling it. And so the game has some very interesting mechanics kind of pushed together that I haven't really seen before. There's a movement mechanic where you're trying to move your little truck around to decide where you're going to build your oil derrick. And then once you've built the oil derrick and harvested the oil, there's a you have to select one of three companies that you want to sell that oil at. And then there's an auction mechanic to determine who gets to sell in each round to each company. I really enjoyed this game an awful lot. And I think it's I think it's one of those games that it might fly under the radar, especially with all the whiz-bang Fantasy Flight stuff with the, it's fantasy and it's sci-fi, and then you got this little game that's about oil production. But I really thought it was a solid game, and I think it would actually be a really good sort of gateway game. It's got some thinking to it, but I think that people who aren't hardcore gamers, it's in the shallow end of the pool as far as depth goes.
It really did not seem like a Fantasy Flight game. I mean, this seemed like something that Rio Grande or... Mayfair would have put out, and I said that a few times during the game when I was just playing. I'm like, man, this does not feel like a Fantasy Flight, and I know they just bought the license and kind of repackaged it, but yeah. It's kind of funny, you know, most Fantasy Flight games you play, there's that expectation, and usually, you know, you know how a Fantasy Flight game runs most of the time, you know, it's hard to quantify, but you can tell when you're playing an FFG game. This totally did not feel like one, but it was enjoyable. I'd play it a few more times, probably not one of my favorites, but it was good enough.
Yeah, that one's right on the edge of the buy try line for me, because I, you know, I'm thinking about maybe picking it up, but have to play it a few more times before I decide that. But yeah, I would suggest checking it out. Continued on with the game night and played a game of Lemming Mafia.
Mm.
This was the game that I picked up. I don't think I mentioned it the last episode. So this is the game I picked up at the Mayfair Games booth with my 50% off coupon. Now, I had fully expected when I got the coupon to get a copy of Steam, which is, I think it retails for $55, something mm-hmm. like that. So still be a pretty good price for a game that's got a lot of really good components in it, good artwork. But then I figured, I'm not going to get that one to the table that often, you know. And I, around here at Game On, we try to, you know, get games to the table as much as possible. We want to be game players, not primarily game collectors.
That's right.
And so I figured that one wasn't going to get to the table very much. But one of the demos I had done to get this coupon was... for Lemming Mafia, which is this little silly sort of race game, I guess. That race, like, you know, foot race, not like
right.
racial tension or anything.
You're going off the rails there.
No. You know, so I'll go off the rails for a second. Because you know what made me think of this? I was listening to the Spiel podcast, and Jolly Roger Games, the guys who made Founding Fathers, they're actually in the works now in negotiations and in designing, because they're designing a two-player card game about the civil rights movement, where like one player plays like the establishment and the other one plays like, I mean, the establishment,
yeah,
you know? I mean, the white establishment.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and then the other players play like the civil rights activists and everything. And as they were talking about it, I'm just feeling kind of uncomfortable. Like, do you really want to do? Anyway, that's just we'll see with that one.
They parodied that on Family Guy one time, where it's like, you don't just win. You never win. You just get a little more ahead each time or something like that. I mean, I'm like, why would you want to play a game like that?
Yeah, so I don't know. Sorry, that was a tangent there, but that kind of surprised me. So this is a game about racing down this pathway onto a pier to jump into the water to your death. Like, you know, lemmings going off the cliff, you know. But these lemmings are in the mafia, and so they're very cute cartoon lemmings with the fedoras on and the big suits. And, you know, the basic idea is that you're trying to sort of influence where these lemmings are going to go. So they're every turn you're going to roll two dice that are going to have two different colors of lemmings on them, and then you'll select one of them to move to the next section of the board, kind of moving them closer. Along the way, they're going to run into things like the getaway car, where they might be able to roll another die to go additional spaces. And they're going to be trying to avoid the dreaded concrete mixer, because as we know, all mafia people, they wear the cement shoes sometimes, and when they've not done the right thing for their bosses. So you can actually have these little concrete shoes that you put on to the lemming figurines, and then if they get three concrete shoes, then they sink to the bottom and they're immediately in last place. So you're going around trying to roll these dice, making your selections as to where these things are going to go. The idea being that you have these mission cards in your hand that will say that you want... they're almost like kind of Ticket to Ride, like, or something like that, you know, where you want gray to finish before red. And then if that happens, then you get those points. And if that doesn't happen, then you lose those points. And so, you know, you're trying to influence things so that you can get those mission cards. Plus, there's an interesting little bidding mechanic in the middle, where you are going to basically place a bet over the course of the game as to who do you think is going to be the winner of the race, which lemming. And then based upon where you know, where when you decided to make that decision as to which one was going to win, you'll get some bonus points there. So it's real light, and we played with, like, I think a full complement of six mm-hmm. players, and I think everybody had a pretty good time. Cody, I think you had a specific opinion about that game, right?
Yeah, as a colorblind person, it is a horrible, horrible game for colorblind people because three of the colors are virtually indistinguishable, I think, for me and people of my ilk. And I just don't understand why games like this can't do red, blue, yellow, green, maybe like a black or a... You know, it's like, why pick a really dark purple and a really dark gray and purple, a dark green? I just don't know why they had to go with those colors.
Yeah, so that made it a little tougher for
you. Yeah, I really enjoyed the game, but it's just the colorblind issues made it kind of a trial at times.
Yeah, so if you're colorblind, that one should give you pause. But otherwise, it's a fun little game, and I think it retails for $35, and I got it for $17.50, so that made it definitely worth the money there. So that was the game on game night. Had a great time with that. I think we had like 20 people. Nice. That's going really great. It's so cool to have everybody come out for that. And, you know, if you're one little plug, haven't done it in a while. If you're local to the Indianapolis area and you wanted to come out to the game on game night, go to gameonpodcast.com and click on game night. And there'll be all the information that you need as to where and when that is. So. The only other things that I really played this past couple of weeks were some games with my family. I taught my wife how to play Biblios. Mm-hmm. We played a two-player game of that, and that was fun. It plays differently with two than with three. Yeah. It's a just different kind of deal because you basically the other player just gets the other card. There's no choice involved as to selecting the card that goes face up on the board or on the table. But we had a really good time with that. She beat me. Mm-hmm. And with the kids, I played a game of If Wishes Were Fishes with my little 5-year-old daughter. And this is like one of her favorite games. She's like, I want to play the game where you sell the fish and then they spoil. She thought that's really funny. There's a card where you can do spoilage and you can send one of your opponent's fish to the trash. And it's got these great big rubbery purple worms that are part of the game. Mm-hmm. So she loves playing with those. So that was a fun game. And then probably the biggest gaming milestone of the week was...
Achievement, you might even say.
It was achievement, yeah. Is I pulled out HeroScape for the first time in probably a year. It's been a while.
Good job, buddy. I'm proud of you.
Yeah. I've got a big bucket of HeroScape stuff that I've collected over the years while it was still in production. And had in the past played some basic games with my son. And he was sort of understanding how the dice mechanics work, but mainly he wanted to play it as a role-playing game. He just wanted to tell stories and mm-hmm. wasn't that interested in the mechanics. Well, so this summer I decided to pull it out, and I told Ethan, I said, we're going to play the full game here, okay? So the full rules, the full advanced rules, not the basic rules for kids. We're going to play the real rules, and he seemed pretty excited about that. So we selected our armies and went through all the different cards and the different special abilities that each card have. I had him read the entire card, and then we kind of discussed what that meant. And then we played the game, and he did great. And he knew exactly how many dice to roll, and you could just see the gears turning in his head. I have reached this amazing milestone with him as far as his age.
That's You've turned the corner.
This 8-year-old age is just great, especially with he's pretty good at reading too, so that helps as well. But we had a great time, and I beat him pretty soundly. But
nice job.
But he did.
Got the W.
He did do a couple of cool special abilities where he got to destroy some of my figures, and I think he enjoyed that. So as soon as we put the game away, he said, "So, Daddy, tomorrow can we set it up again and do a rematch?" I'm like, "Oh, not tomorrow, but yes, we will." So that was a lot of fun. That's all I've been playing, except for some stuff I played with Cody, which we'll talk about in our review. So, Cody, I'll stop talking. Tell me what you've been playing.
Cool. Well, I played everything John mentioned at the game on game night, and it was a grand old time.
We were in all the games together, weren't we?
We were. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we were. Over the Independence Day weekend, I got a chance to break out Survive Escape from Atlantis with my in-laws and teach them that. That was a hit. I think everyone really enjoyed it. Like I mentioned earlier, for some reason, I thought the base game played up to 6, and that's why I brought it. I'm like, big family, bring up this 6-player game, and then I realized it was only four player. So I think I played one game and taught the other, but I'm really looking forward to that 5th and 6th player just because I think that game screams to be played with 6 people, But big fan of that one. I got in yet another game of Twilight Imperium.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. And I almost won my second game in a row.
Wow.
Basically, it comes down to, this is at the end of hour 12. And
seriously, hour 12?
Yeah, seriously, hour 12.
Golly.
That includes a dinner break.
Food break.
Yeah, and we had... Everyone there knew how to play, but a few people there were pretty prone to analysis paralysis. Mm. And in a game like Twilight Imperium, it's just kind of like, oh no. No, you can't take a 20-minute turn in this game.
Right.
Basically, at the end of each kind of turn, you get the... There are a bunch of objectives on the board that you get victory points for, but you do it in the previous turn's order. And the person who was in front of me managed to claim the winning objective right before I would have.
Oh.
So I was that I got as close as I could to winning without winning. So,
nice.
So that, yeah, that's an achievement.
Still enjoying that one?
I really like it. It's funny. I think I like it better with 3 or 4 than I do with 5+. Because we played a 3-player game, and I thought, oh, this isn't going to go well. This game's not meant to be played with 3. It was a blast. It was probably 4 hours on the high end. And I still got the feel of the game, and it was, you know, you could, it wasn't a day killer, you know.
Yeah,
it's like you do it in 4 hours, you're done.
You still felt like you could do all the things you wanted to do, even in a 3-player game.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You build all the stuff you wanted or whatever. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
I had a lot of fun with it, so I played that. I got a chance to play Hammer of the Scots, which is a war game that I'd been meaning to try. Sean Johnson, who runs he kind of organizes the game on game night. He likes war games, and I've mentioned I'd like to try that in Washington's War. So he brought over Hammer of the Scots, and we played that. We ended up playing it twice because the first time I lost in the very first turn of the very first year. I lost at the earliest moment you could lose.
Well done.
It's this very rare thing because I was the Scots and he was the English. And
there's your problem right there.
Man, the Scottish folks have a tough... That's the War of Scottish Independence. It's really tough.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the Scottish player loses if all of their nobles are gone. And basically, through a card that he played, he was able to send some troops to the north of Scotland, and I was basically pinned. And not having played before, I didn't realize that the smart strategy there was to kind of protect my nobles. So I sent them all off to battle to kind of push the English back, and they all died. And then Sean kind of sheepishly looked at me. He's like, I win. And I'm like, oh, crap. You know, I felt like an idiot. So we played again. It lasted 3 or 4 years the second time, but I still lost.
Wow.
But I really liked it. It's a war game. It definitely has that feel, but it's light enough. I think it's only like a couple hours at its peak, and it's a block war game. It's not Hex and Counter, but I really enjoyed it. I really want to play it again. I may even pick it up because I think it's entry level enough to where non-war gamers can pick it up. I mean, there's a bit of a learning curve, but it's a heck of a lot of fun, and it's one I'd like to try again. We also played Rallyman while he was here.
.fr.
.fr, yeah. Rallyman stock going down a little bit for me.
Really?
It's getting kind of repetitive for me. It's like I still like it. I don't know if I want to make the leap and own it just because it's like, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's still an okay game. I want to try some other racing games. One I did try was Top Race, which is part of the trilogy of like the Detroit Cleveland Grand Prix and Daytona 500.
Okay. Was this Dave Briel?
This was Dave Briel, the
Dave
racing
Briel
man.
Dave Briel is the racing guy.
That's right. And the Top Race was a lot of fun. It played a lot like the other two. You know, it had kind of a betting mechanic to it, and I really enjoyed it. I think that's the kind of racing game I'd like to play. I would like to give Formula D another shot, because I haven't played that in a really, really long time, and I'd like to kind of give that a whirl.
Yeah, let's pull that one out sometime. Yeah. I like that one a lot.
We also played, I introduced Code 77.
Seven.
To there's another seven on there. To Dave and my other friend Greg, and it was Greg's third time, Dave's first time, but they all seemed to enjoy that one. What else?
Yeah, that one's fun. That one was better than I expected.
Yeah, I did not expect much.
I really
from
thought
that,
that
one,
was
going to
hurt my brain, and it was really not too bad.
Yeah, it was good. Played Survive with them as well, and finished off with some Tumbling Dice. Which I won.
Of course you did.
Of course I did.
What's the current
apartment? 173 is the current house record.
Apartment
record, yep.
Is that your?
That's my record.
Okay.
The old one was like 166, and it stood for a very long time.
So you're getting some good play out of that game. That was worth the money, right?
Yeah. And And another dexterity game I played today, actually, was Crokinole.
Oh, yeah?
My good buddy Sam and Jackie. And I played Sam, and he utterly destroyed me. But I had fun with it. And that's something I think someday I'm just going to need to invest in one of the nice Helensky boards. Because they look so cool hanging on the wall. You know?
Oh, yeah.
It's a conversation starter.
Yeah, it's like a decoration along with being a game.
Yeah, and anyone can play it. And I taught them Biblios as well, and they seemed to really like it. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Anything else? I did get in a few games of Memoir. 44.
Uh-huh. As the regular or the Overlord?
Regular. It was good. Played some scenarios that had, you know, I played with my father-in-law, and I was kind of showing him. He'd only played, like, the Pegasus Bridge scenario with uh-huh. just infantry, so we did one with armor and artillery to kind of show him some more of the game, and I think he seemed to like it. And
cool.
That's a good game.
You played some King of Tokyo with him, too, didn't you?
I did play some King of Tokyo.
I remember the Facebook post. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. And I lost at that, I believe.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's my rundown.
Cool. Any doing any modeling? Any modeling painting stuff?
No, I need to. I mean, we haven't played War Machine in so long.
It's been a while.
The Great Kador repaint is almost done. All I need to do is finish the pikes and shields on my pikemen, and I need to paint the last jack. But other than that, they're ready to go with the repaint. But I just haven't been really inspired because, you know, painting a guy is fun. Painting a bunch, like, six little shields and six little pikes.
Not as much fun.
Not much fun. Ready to get Dystopian Wars to the table because I have that fleet ready to go.
So. And the reason why I mention that is because I finished painting my bombers.
Mm-hmm.
And so my fleet is ready to go, too. So we can get that out anytime that you want to. So
there we go.
we'll pull the book out and learn how to play. And we'll tell you guys all about how that goes. But I'm really liking the way my bombers look.
Yep.
Those turned out a lot better than I thought they would. I was worried about the little plastic stands that they sit on.
Mm-hmm.
Did you glue yours to the stands?
No.
Okay. I did.
I probably should.
Well, I did because they wobble really badly.
Yeah.
And so I figured hopefully they'll sit in my battle foam box, you know, and won't break. But yeah, those are looking really nice. So yeah, we'll definitely get that at the table soon. All right. Well, I think that's the rundown, right?
I think it is.
Well, cool. That was a good rundown.
Thank you.
So you may remember a couple episodes back, we had a contest that we had started regarding the game Focabulary from Out of the Box Games. Focabulary is kind of a cool new party game where you use these cubes to make brand new words for things that don't have words, definitions and stuff. And so we put the task onto you listeners to tell us about your biggest gaming pet peeve, right?
Yeah.
And to make up a word for it and give us a definition for it, and which we would select a winner, and then that winner would win a copy of Focabulary from Out of the Box Games.
And a pair of the Game On Dice.
And a pair of the newly minted Game On Dice, yep.
Mm-hmm.
So Cody has our winner. We got a lot of great entries.
We had some really good ones.
Yep. And so we've now narrowed it down to one final one, and go ahead, Cody.
All right, our winner is Michael Denman. And as a side, Michael Denman likes to point out on the Guild that the Jones Theory is not an original creation. I know. Just throwing that out, Mike.
We'll send you the prize anyway, Michael.
That's right. But his winning entry was Homomy, which is Homomy. And the definition is a player who never seems to realize when it's their turn, sometimes as a result of not paying attention, and sometimes because they can't seem to follow the flow of the game. See also Richard, John. I added the last part.
Hey.
Sorry.
No, that's true. I am the Homomy in just about every game. Yeah.
Yeah. So congratulations, Michael. Homomy has won you a copy of Focabulary and a pair of the beautiful, stellar, very lucky Game On Dice.
Woo!
Baby, 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 gotta pay to play. If you don't like the rules, get out of my way. You know, little honey, you ain't that bad. Just worth the loving I've ever had. I'm about to burn out. I'm about to burn out. You know, little honey, you done me wrong. So step right aside and get real gone.
All right, well, it's time for the big deal, and for this big deal, this kind of spins from an email we received based on a comment that John made last episode. So, John, why don't you go ahead and give us the setup?
Okay. Well, this
my radio voice.
We got an email from Andrew, I believe it's Geyer, uh-huh. Andrew Geyer, and he says, hi, guys, thanks. I just want to say thanks so much for your podcast. Been listening now for several years.
Wow.
Years. Wow.
Look at that.
That's amazing. It's weird to think about. And whenever I get into a funk or work is weighing me down, I tune into your podcast and it takes me to a happy gaming place.
Well, thank you.
That's nice. Thank you. Anyway, he goes on to say he's become a regular convention goer on the West Coast where he lives, attending three per year at least, along with several one-day sessions and regular game groups in his city. You know, he thought our comments on Origins and Gen Con were interesting. He says hopefully he'll be able to make it to Gen Con someday. Okay, here's kind of the meat of what he was saying. He says, Cody, you mentioned examining the time and money you spend on gaming. Now, I think he probably meant me, John, because that's mm-hmm. what I said, but Cody would never examine that.
Sure, I would.
Just kidding. All right, he said, you mentioned examining the time and money you spend on gaming. How do you think the reduction of time and money will impact your gaming? Have you set goals for yourself with these two changes in mind? I like the Jones theory, but I have a hard time following it.
Don't we all?
Given that, I am reaching a point to where I am no longer excited about purchasing games unless I can find a great buy at a local thrift store. Recently found the 1999 Hasbro edition of Acquire, the ones with the nice big buildings, for $4.99, only one piece missing.
Nice.
Pretty awesome. I think we all go through a gaming funk or rethought process every now and again to examine the hobby. Maybe an episode to discuss how to avoid burnout and keep the hobby going and balanced within our everyday lives. Just a thought. Keep up the great work. Thanks so much. Sincerely, Andy Geyer.
Ask and you shall receive, Andy Geyer.
That's right. And we thought that was a really good topic for maybe a little bit of discussion here, because we are in the heat of, literally, the heat of convention season, where there's a lot of gaming going on. Now, I realize that not everybody who listens to this show goes to gaming conventions, but I know that for us, this is a time where we're playing just a lot of games, because you know, I just came back from Origins, where I played a ton of new stuff, got Gen Con coming up with a bunch of new stuff, and by the time we get to about the middle to end of August, you know, you sort of feel this kind of dizzying. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I've just been playing games for months now, you know. And, I'm relatively new to the hobby in the last 5 or 6 years. Cody's been a gamer for a lot longer than that. But we just wanted to talk about what happens in this hobby when you start to experience symptoms of gamer burnout, you know. Right. And, you know, how would you, Cody, how would you describe, have you ever had periods like that in your life? And how would you describe what that feels like?
A lot of the times, I think I've had them more with RPGs than board games. But, you know, RPG, whether it's with a system or the people you're playing with, usually it's more the people you're playing with, but sometimes you just, after a while, you just don't like a system anymore. Mm-hmm. You just want to move on to something else. A lot of the times, you know, from an RPG perspective, you know, a new system will come out or so you just look at it and it looks so much better. You know, you just, it's like the grass is really green over there. It's like, I really want to jump to this new system. I really want to move into this. And it may or may not be better. You just kind of want a break or a change. And usually a break in an RPG campaign is, you know, the first sign of death, because you take a long break and then you never really get back into it and it's over.
Right.
You know, and insofar as board games, there have just been times where you know maybe it's a new hotness game or maybe I'm just frustrated with certain game mechanics. I think my latest thing with co-op games is a good example. I'm just kind of burnt out on this co-op game. It's like, maybe in the future I'll play some more again, but right now it's like I don't even, if you say co-op game, my mind turns off. Uh-huh. Even if it's this new hotness game, it's like, well, I just don't really care to try it. So I don't know, for me it's more it either falls into mechanically based or people based. You know, it's like, you know, you can game with a great group, but man, if you're just gaming with them all the time, it can just start to wear on you.
Yeah. And for me, it actually, I think, goes even beyond types of gaming into, and again, this might be because I'm relatively new at this, and so I've really immersed myself into the gaming hobby pretty heavily in the last few years. Of course, you know, became a podcaster and all that. But I find that after long periods of time, like conventions and things like that, it's almost like the equivalent of when I was a kid, I used to play video games, and I would sit down with, and I wasn't even really much of a video gamer, but I would sit down with an Atari or a Nintendo or something like that, and I'd be sitting and playing a game for 2 or 3 hours, and it's like I would get to this point where I was so immersed in it that I would sort of put the controller down, back up and look around the room and like kind of blinking like, oh my gosh, I was so immersed in this. It just sort of feels weird. Like, you mm-hmm. know, why was I so immersed in that? And so I sort of just have these stints of time where I feel like I've just been spending too much time gaming, you know, mm-hmm. that I just need to disconnect myself from it a little bit. when I was a kid, I watched a good amount of TV. My dad was a guy who he really liked TV an awful lot, and that was actually a big favorite pastime of his. He had shows and, you know, sports and stuff that he liked to watch, and so you know, I mean, I'm sure it contributed to my non-athletic lifestyle, but I became that kind of a guy too. But what I would find is that after a period of time of watching a lot of TV, I'd go visit my grandparents or I would go to school or whatever, and that is all I would be talking about. Like everything that would pop into my head and everything that I would want to say to somebody would be, you know, I saw this on this TV show or this character said this or whatever. And I feel like I've gotten to that place with games sometimes where when I'm just in a social conversation, even with a non-gamer, I'm wanting to talk about my podcast or I'm wanting to talk about this game that I just played. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, it's a hobby. It's an interest. It's cool to have that. But I get to a point sometimes where I'm like, this is all that's on my mind. And I don't think that's the way I need to be living, where gaming is the only thing that's on my mind. So it makes me just want to sort of take a step back from it. So, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at as far as that goes.
That's a good way to put it, I think.
And I'm not saying that I'm in that spot right now. I know that one thing that I thought of when we were thinking about this topic was Scott Nicholson, who is a fellow gamer and podcaster and professor. Well, not a fellow professor. I'm not a professor. And he used to put out the videos, Board Games with Scott. And he was one of the pioneers of the video review of board games.
It was the first video or podcast thing I ever really watched related to a game with Scott Nicholson.
Okay.
And of course, my wife loves him because he's, you know, he's the big gaming and libraries guy. And she's a librarian, and that's just a big, you know, I don't know. Scott Nicholson's like a superhero. I love the guy. I still want to meet him. I've never met him.
Yeah, we've never met him in person. But he you can sort of see in his videos, he went through this sort of process too, where, you know, he was doing the videos for a long time. And then he sort of couldn't figure out why he was doing the videos anymore.
Yeah.
And he took a step back from it. He came back to it for a little bit. And now he's sort of taking a long-term, you know, indefinite break from these kind of videos to go and try some different things. And so I guess the reason why I'm bringing all this up is just listeners, for you guys, just sort of think about, you know, your gaming habits and everything. And do you ever experience this? Do you ever, either what Cody's talking about, where you're trying to play a particular mechanic or you're in the same RPG system with the same people and you start to feel kind of burned out on that? Or is it, you know, like what I'm saying, where just gaming in general, you just sort of feel like you need to take a step back from it? You know, are there ways that we can avoid that? You know, are there things that we can be doing just in our normal hobbying and playing that will keep us from getting to this point where we're just so saturated and inundated with something that we just want to, you know, throw it out for a while?
Yeah, I mean, some things that help with me, because in my situation, I feel guilty about this at times, is that with my current life situation, I'm a gamer, my wife's a gamer. We don't have any kids, and our jobs are to where we have a pretty regular schedule, and we can game most anytime we want for as long as we want. And I know there are a lot of people there that have, you know, really, really super busy lives. They either have kids, or they don't have a spouse that games, or something to where if they can game one night every couple weeks, then that is good, you know. Or if they have the dreaded spouse who hates games, which I can't even fathom.
Yeah.
Some things that have helped with me is, like, I've really tried lately to, I find that if I really chase the cult of the new, and I was really bad about this maybe a year or two ago, that burns me out more than anything.
Yeah.
Because I did that sort of with RPGs, where it's like, oh, I have to get the new Pathfinder product, I have to get the new D&D product, where it's like, I need to just play what's fun for me. I almost need to put blinders on, and it's like, you know, if games, you know, Battleship Galaxies, for example, it's like, that looks fun, I'd like to try it, but I don't need to, like, obsess over it and go chase it and get it day one, you know.
Of course you don't, because I just bought it.
Well, yeah. but I mean, that may be a poor example.
No,
but
I'm just kidding.
But it's kind of like, you know, say we enjoy Alien Frontiers. Well, maybe we just need to bring that out more. Because a lot of the times, you know, we look at the collection and we write everything off without playing it. It's like, oh, I've played that. You know, oh, there's nothing more to do. And then 99% of the time when we actually bring that game to the table, it's like, oh, why didn't we do this sooner? You know, we really like this game. So for me, how I've kind of helped to stem burnout, and it works sometimes, it doesn't others, is to just avoid the cult of the new, play what's fun. It seems silly, but, you know, if you're at burnout, go to some of your old standbys, as odd as it sounds, and play those and kind of discover why you got into this hobby in the first place.
Yeah.
Because I always come back around to that. And and it kind of, you know, enlivens my passion for the hobby. You know, it rekindles that flame. So that's what I would suggest.
No, that's a good point. I had a couple things that I wrote down, the things to sort of help you stave off this kind of a burnout feeling. Mm-hmm. And again, I do realize that there, like Cody said, there's some folks that are in completely different situations that are listening to the show that, you know, they're only even ever getting to game once a week, once a month. You know, only at conventions. I mean, I've met some folks that coming to Gen Con is a huge deal for them because it's really the only time they get to play the whole year, you know, so they really build up for it. So, you know, so you may not have that burnout problem if that's your situation here. But these are just some things I thought of to sort of stave off burnout. And one is something that Cody has said before, as a gaming resolution before, is to make purchases count, you know, to make what you're buying count. And then what, you know, what you just said about the cult of the new, I think is really, really true, that when you're constantly chasing after that new thing, and that's really true in any area of life. If you're chasing after the new car, the new boat, or the new TV or whatever, new iPod, you know, you can get a little bit just kind of bogged down in that, mm-hmm. you know, and it's, and what you have is never good enough, you know? And, the truth is that whatever games you have in your collection that you loved before, you know, that you probably still love them, you know, and if you have take the time to really focus in on those, then, you know, you can rediscover them. So, like going to Gen Con next month, you know, I'm going to see a whole lot of new stuff, and I've made my list of what I want to take a look at, but, you know, I want to be real careful about what gets bought, mm-hmm. In pursuit of that new thing, because especially in board games, man, there's nothing new under the sun in board games.
Yeah.
We talk about Quarriors and how cool we think that game is. But, you know, it's deck building with dice. You know, it's fun and it's a little bit fresh. But, you know, you're never going to find anything that's that innovative.
And I've mentioned this on the show before. It's for me, it's cool looking at Gen Con program books from 2, 3, 4 years ago, or pictures, because with Gen Con you have, you know, there's always one game outside of like Magic or D&D that sponsors a big tournament or a big hootenanny or a big something.
The spoils
come right. to mind. And they're never there the next year. Yeah. You know, it's like Hecatomb, not there. The spoils, never there. World of Warcraft, the TCG, still there, but not.
World of Warcraft, the miniatures game,
not there. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
Dreamblade.
Yeah, and it's funny seeing all these things because I remember going back to how I felt at the time. And I'm like, oh man, this Hecatomb's got to be the next big thing. You know, look at how much press it's getting. You know, look at all the hubbub about it, and it's just gone by the next year. So that's a big deal. You know, Cadwalon, City of Thieves. Let that be our flag.
Market saturation, I think, is just uh-huh. you know, and it's because people's brains are saturated on certain kinds of games, and they just can't take any more of it. So
quality over quantity.
Yeah, here's another one I was thinking of regarding if you have a gaming group,
mm-hmm.
is because you were saying, you know, you can. You get a little sick of your system, maybe get kind of sick of the people that you're with too, you know?
Yep.
And what I would say is if you have a gaming group, be it large or small, don't let your gaming group be just about gaming.
Oh yeah.
Like if you're going, we have the game on game night. If you're going to a game night and you're meeting with people and you're playing games, that's great, you know? And as gamers, we tend to like to just kind of congregate and then focus on the game. It's a great thing about a convention is you can just show up with people. If they all know the rules of the game, you don't have to all speak English, you know? You can mm-hmm. play the game, and that's fun. But if you're in a regular game group, part of that experience should be about building relationships with the people that you're with, I would think, you know?
Yeah.
That you're getting more out of it than just being able to play, you know, push cardboard around on a board or play your role-playing game or whatever. So, yeah.
And we're not saying, you know, anyone you play a game with at a convention has to be, you know, a lifelong friend.
No.
But you have to remember to engage them as people too, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be all touchy-feely about it, but it's like, you know, they're from somewhere else. They share this hobby. You know, they have their likes, dislikes, and you're kind of sharing that moment. That's what I like about Gen Con is you get that on like a 40,000 person scale. You have people from all over the world converging on one city, one weekend, and they're just kind of sharing their love of games, you know, all together. And I think that's really neat.
Yeah, and I'm not even talking so much about, I mean, conventions is one thing, but just even your normal game group.
Mm-hmm.
You could play games with someone in a game group for years. I could see this happening at the game on game night. There's folks that we've met that, I mean, it's nice to see them and I'm acquainted with them, but I don't really know a whole lot about them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's good for us to share our lives together and to get to know people, you know, and to create a support structure for each other. Not to get too touchy feely here, but you know, it's mm-hmm. you know, to make friends,
yeah.
The friends that are more than just you know, playing at the gaming table, but that can, you know, be there to help you with, you know, other things in your life, you know. So I think that's important. I think that'll help to keep your gaming experiences fresh. That if you're burned out on games, you still go to your game group because you just want to be around those people, you know? And then it becomes less about what, you know, what cardboard you're pushing around and more about the people that you're playing with. So,
well said, well said.
I also put down here, diversify your gaming menu. You know, that if you're a board gamer, we believe in the well-rounded gamer here at Game On. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a board gamer, try a role-playing game. If you're a LARPer, then try anything else.
Uh-oh.
If you're a collectible card game player, you know, back off from that a little bit and try something else. Try a board game. You know, doing these kind of things, you know, trying miniatures for the first time might help to spice things up and not feel like you're in a rut or
that's huge. Situation. And you don't have to spend a lot of money in whatever genre you're going into. You know, if you're a board gamer trying an RPG, there are a lot of cheap RPGs that are quality. You know, Savage Worlds to name one, and there are others, but I mean, you know, that's an easy way. If you're looking to get into CCGs, you can get a defunct CCG or something like that, you know, just to get a taste of something else.
Yeah.
You know, miniatures games, you can get things like, you know, I would even say like Summoner Wars. You know, it's not a real miniatures game per se, but it plays like one.
Yeah.
Or you can, you know, there's a lot of options out there. So don't feel like you have to break the bank just to, you know, change up your gaming menu.
Right. So, I mean, I think that'll help you to you know, feel like you're not in a rut. The last thing I put is go outside.
Really?
And by that, I mean, you know, our lives can be full of a lot of different things, you know? Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be just that one thing. Now, I'm not saying that... probably a very small majority of people would say that gaming is all that I do, you know, in my whole life. But I mean, it's easy to get into a rut of this is what I do. This is kind of who I am. You know, I'm a gamer. Mm-hmm. And you can have pride in that and saying that you're a gamer. But if that really starts to define who you are, then again, maybe you need to step back from it and try something else. You know, I've been wanting to play golf this summer because I haven't done that in a while. And, you know, it's just good to have diverse interests and you know, maybe taking a step back and cutting down the amount of time or money that you're spending on gaming to try something else will help to rekindle that. I think what Cody said is really one of the main points we want to make here is that sometimes you need to step back from something or tone it down or eliminate it for a time to be able to understand why you loved it in the first place. You know, it's like you can't miss something if it's always there. You mm-hmm. know, but then if you're disciplined enough to sort of cut back from it, and you know, then you realize, oh, this is why I loved going to Gen Con. This is why I loved being with that group. You know, and this, I know it sounds like a therapy session here, but
in a lot of ways, less is more. You know, you have to, if you feel overwhelmed or burnout, you have to distill it down to its core elements. You know, why do I like games? Why did I get into gaming? You know, not to get real meta about it, but you have to, you know, why the heck am I doing this? Is it just a habit now? You know, it's like, what makes Gen Con so fun? What makes playing RPGs so fun? It's like, you know, there's been times lately I've really had to drill down to that and be like, well, why the heck am I even doing this? So,
yeah, exactly.
A good self-evaluation from time to time is pretty good.
Yep. And so maybe you guys can give yourself that self-evaluation before you head off to Gen Con and saturate yourself with more gaming. Right. But we would, you know, hope that you would stave off burnout, a gaming burnout, and can continue participating in this great hobby. And, you know, you don't feel like you have to abandon it. Again, I don't know. We may be just speaking into the air here, and mm-hmm. no one that's listening to the show has any problem with this at all. But yeah, you know, something that is on our mind. We would love to hear your stories. You know, I mean, have you ever experienced gamer burnout? You know, have you ever felt like, man, I'm just too into this, and I got to back off from it? Or you know, what are your opinions on this this topic? Mm-hmm. And so we'd invite you to write us at the Game On Inbox.
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Yep, and just let us know what you think. You can also call the Game On hotline
at 4138 Game On.
Yeah, and just give us your opinion. Let us know how you feel about this. And Andy, we want to thank you for sending us this email to get the topic started.
Great topic.
And hopefully, if you're experiencing a gamer funk, you can defunkify.
All right, and kind of dovetailing from our discussion on not always chasing the cult of the new, our biochar tonight is about a game that, not exactly an old game, but it's been out a few months.
A few months.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. And it is Yomi.
It's Magic the Gathering.
It is. A little thing called D&D. No, this game is called Yomi, and it is a two-player game that uses a kind of a deck of normal playing cards, but mixed up a little bit, and it's supposed to simulate like a two-player fighting game like Street Fighter or things like that, you know, the combo-based 2D fighters. And this is from the same company, Serlin Games, that produced Puzzle Strike, which was a, you know, a chip-building, deck-building sort of a game that was based around, you know, the Puzzle Fighter series that you might see on Xbox Live and all that.
Right.
So continuing with their trend of basing board and card games off of video games, this is kind of their flagship one, I would say. I would say Yomi's their big thing here, and we're going to see if it passes the test. That was dramatic.
Yeah, wow.
Thank you. Ooh. So, John, give us the
chills.
Thank you. John, give us the breakdown on Yomi.
All right. So, Yomi is the word Yomi, or the full verb form, Yomu, is Japanese for reading or to read. And strange enough, Cody and I have both taken Japanese before. And before we met, that was one of the things we had in common was, well, we actually took Japanese in school.
Yeah, so. 3 years of my life, I won't get back.
Oh, and I had fun with that. That was cool.
I wanted to take French. They didn't offer it in my high school. So.
Oh,
right.
You took it in high school. I didn't.
Yeah.
Okay, so I took it in college. And I found the best part about Japanese is I get to learn to write all, you know, the Japanese characters. And so I'd go to parties and I'd like write girls' names on napkins in Japanese. Hey, won't write your name in Japanese.
There you go.
Yeah.
Look at you.
I was a stud.
You devil.
Yeah. Anyway, so Yomi is set in this what's called this Fantasy Strike universe. And if you think of something like Street Fighter or, well, you know, Super Puzzle Fighter, which is kind of what Puzzle Strike's based off out of. It's these sort of Japanimation sort of characters in this world. And from the rules here, it says Fantasy Strike is an Olympic-style tournament that takes place in a fantasy martial arts world fractured by political conflict. Stone Golem Garrus Rook founded the tournament series to bring together the many provinces of the authoritarian Flagstone Kingdom and plant the idea of a different way of life.
Sure.
Meanwhile, Grave Stormborn has gained notoriety throughout the kingdom as the only fighter to defeat Rook in a tournament match. Though Grave has no interest in matters of state, his fighting skills have piqued the interest of several factions. So there's your flavor text right there. Basically, the idea is that each player is going to get a deck of cards, and there are 54 cards in each deck. So it's just like a regular deck of playing cards, and it has all of the numbers and the normal suits, spades, clubs, diamonds, and hearts that a normal deck would have. So you could really use any of these decks of cards just to play normal card games. It even says on top of the flap of each of the boxes for the decks, it says poker and Yomi.
No. Don't think you're going to be using it for poker, though.
Probably not. Although, you know, really, if you can't find a normal deck of cards, you know, I guess you could pick up one of these, but they're kind of cheap. So, so in this game, each player has a deck, and that deck represents a particular character in this Fantasy Strike world, and you're going to battle another character. And you know, try to reduce their life total. It's very CCG like in that, you know, you have an amount of life and your opponent has an amount of life, and you go at it and battle and attack each other until one person is dead. Now, where this is not like something like Magic the Gathering or a collectible card game is that this game is not collectible. Each one of these decks is self-contained, and it's not expandable. At least not yet. I'm not sure if they're planning on that in the future, but it's not expandable. You know, if you have the guy's name was Grave, was it Grave? Grave Rook? Or no, Grave Storm. I don't know these names. Garrus Rook. Yeah, Garrus Rook's the
Esquire.
The golem guy, right? So he has his own deck, and it has all of his moves and all of his special abilities and that kind of stuff in there. In addition to the regular deck of cards, you're going to get one character card, which will have some of his stats on your character stats. It'll also have one overarching giant cool ability. So like the Stone Golem guy has a rock armor as his special ability, and so there's text on the card that says what that does. And so every character is going to have one of those big overarching special abilities. So the way this game is going to be played out is that you're going to shuffle up your deck of cards and then draw 7 of them. Now these cards are interestingly designed in that they're sort of double-sided. Not double-sided so much as double, how would you describe that?
How would you say it?
Turn the card upside down and it has a different...
Yeah, yeah. There's info on the... If you look at a playing card, there's... if you split it in half horizontally,
there's a top half and a bottom half, yeah. and then they each have separate information. So if you turn it one way, the other half, the bottom half would be upside down.
Right. Very good. So some of these things...
There needs to be a word for that.
Yeah.
There probably is.
Because if you say other side of the card, then that makes it sound like you're flipping the card over. Yeah. So yeah, it's like the other half of the card.
Multi-purpose, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And the way that you orient this card before you play it is going to be important. So here are the things that you can do with these cards. There's attacks, throws, and then blocks and dodges. And the game operates under a simple rock, paper, scissors sort of mechanic. And there's even a reference card in each deck that will explain this to you. Basically, attacks beat throws. Throws beat blocks or dodges. And blocks or dodges beat attacks. Just that simple. So what you're going to be doing is you're going to select one of the seven cards from your hand. And it's going to be either a throw, attack, block, or dodge. And like I said, you have to orient the card a certain way. So for example, I'm looking at this... Garrus Rook guy's deck right now, and his 10 of clubs card, one half of it says that it's a throw, and then if you turn the card, rotate the card around, it says that it's an attack. So you can play it as either an attack or a throw, and you have to orient the card that way. You're going to place it face down in front of you, and your opponent will do the same thing. Then you will turn both cards over and reveal them, and then you'll do this comparison, this rock, paper, scissors mechanic. So and just like I mentioned there. Now, if you have two attacks that are together, then what it's going to be is whichever one is the quickest attack, that's the one that's going to trigger first. And so there's a speed on each one of these things. It's a little icon. And so whatever the lower number of speed is, that's what's going to trigger. And so these cards are very interesting in the way that the graphic design is on them. Each card has kind of a unique picture of your character kind of doing a cool move, like he's doing a punch or a kick or a throw or something kind of acrobatic.
Very Street Fighter-esque.
Very Street Fighter-esque, yep. And so, you'll play the card, and then once you've decided who is the winner of the battle, then the person who won has an opportunity to add cards on top of it in like a combo. So think about this in a video game sort of sense here where, you do that first attack and then you keep pressing buttons up, down, left, right, whatever it is, and you can do even more punches or kicks or whatever and then do some kind of big cool finishing move. So this is what you're basically doing with cards in this game. So think of it in that sort of video game realm. So what's going to happen though is that the player who lost the battle or this particular round will have an opportunity to take a card and lay it face down in front of them, like a second card. And that card can be whatever they want, but if that card is a joker, then that joker is going to stop any damage that would be coming from any further attacks, any further combo attacks. But it can also be played as a bluff. So let's say that I'm playing with Cody and I do an attack and he does a throw. My attack beats his throw. And so my card will have a little damage indicator on it. So let's say I'm doing like 6 damage, right? Well, so then Cody can play a card face down. And, I'm going to see that and I'm going to say, well, that's either a joker or it could be just a complete bluff. Or he could just choose not to do that at all and just take any additional damage that I decide to lay down there. So, let's say he plays a card face down and now I have to decide what I want to do. So I look at the cards in my hand and maybe I have like a 7. And that's another attack. And each card will sort of say on it what it can be linked to for a combo. It's really easy to understand as far as the way that the card reads. So on this 6 attack, for example, it'll say combos into a 7, a linker, or an ender. So if I have a 7, then I can play that 7 down, and that's part of the combo. And the 7 would say combos into an 8, a linker, or an ender. Now, a linker would be maybe a face card or some other kind of card that will have a word on it that says linker. And so you can put that card down and then continue. And you're basically just going to put a card down and then read what it will link to and then see if you can play another one. So you can sort of set these things up in your hand of, I've got a 3, 4, 5, and a 6. So if I can get this thing to go through, then I can play this big combo that will deal more damage. Because what you'll do is add up all of the damage on those combos when you get to the end of it. And that'll be the total damage that's dealt to your opponent. Now, once you've played all those combo cards, then your opponent's going to turn that face-down card over, and if it's a joker, then all of that additional damage just completely goes away. If it's not a joker, then he takes all the damage, and then all the combat cards will get discarded. So that's the basic gist of things. If you play things like blocks or dodges, then you might be able to draw additional cards, or if you're not... If you're not actually attacked or thrown, then you can sometimes take a block card back up into your hand so you don't have to discard it. Because getting cards in this game is pretty important. And if you deplete your hand too quickly, then you can find yourself with not, you know, very much to deal with. You're going to draw a card at the very beginning of your turn, but that's about the only time that you're going to get cards normally. So after all that is resolved and, you know, the person will take the hit on their life total, then you're going to have what's called a power-up phase. And this is where you can basically do things to get better cards into your hand. The most powerful cards in this game are definitely the aces, mm-hmm. which of course makes a lot of sense. And those are going to have some of the coolest abilities on them that deal the most damage. And they're actually also going to have the coolest artwork on them. I mean, most of the cards, the number cards, are mostly white and they just have like a little picture on them. But all the face cards, and especially the aces, have this great full color kind of comic book artwork on it. It's very, very cool.
Think of these as your... The big high level combos in Street Fighter where your combo bar is maxed out and there's this big full screen animation and it's just a big flashy
the Mortal very powerful Kombat type. Finisher and so for example one of the final abilities for the Stone Golem guy is called the Checkmate Buster. And that's the Ace of Spades there, and basically it has a speed of 0.0. So it's not going to be countered. It's the fastest thing that's going to be on the table there. But it has this ability where it says, and it deals 50 damage. And to give you an idea, most of the characters only have like 70 to 100 life points to begin with. So if you can get this thing to trigger, that's going to be huge. But it'll say, when you play this move, you must discard 3 more aces. So to be able to play this card, you have to have all 4 aces in your hand. So getting that set up is going to take a little bit of time. You know, much like getting those really cool, amazing combos set up with your, you know, combo bar maxed out and everything, takes a little bit of time and a little bit of a strategy. So that's part of the fun of this game. So how do you get more aces in your deck?
How do you get more aces in your deck, John?
Yeah, okay, well, or in your hand.
In your hand.
Thank you, Cody.
Thank you.
Well, there's two ways you can do it. One, you can discard combinations of cards that are in your hand to go into the deck and look for aces. So you can, if you discard a pair of cards, a pair of fours, a pair of fives, whatever, you can get one ace out of your deck or out of your discard pile. If you have 3 of a kind, you can get 2 aces. 4 of a kind, you can get 3 aces. Also, you can get aces out of your deck if you've played a successful combo on your turn. And so if you've played like a 3-hit combo, you can go get 1 ace. 4-hit combo, 2 aces. 5-hit combo, 3 aces. So by playing those combos, you sort of build this momentum and you can go and get those aces out of your deck that you can hopefully play on a later turn. So getting aces is an important thing in the game. But also the other face cards that are in the decks, the kings and queens and jacks and the tens, those are pretty powerful abilities as well. So everything is governed by what's written on the cards, and there are 10 separate decks in this game that you can choose from, and they all play very different because the abilities are just completely different. But it's very well balanced, I think, and just a lot of fun the way that those things interact. So just to kind of wrap up, your turn structure is you're going to draw a card. You're going to do that combat phase by each player selecting a card and turning it over. You'll do that rock, paper, scissors comparison. And then whoever wins will have an opportunity to play combos. And whoever lost will have an opportunity to play that face down card that could be a joker. After someone plays combos, then the loser is going to turn over their face down card. If it's a joker, all the combo damage is not dealt. If it's not a joker, then all the damage is dealt. You kind of settle up everything as far as that goes. And then you have your power-up phase where you can discard cards to get aces. And then that's the end of the turn. And you just kind of repeat this until one player is dead. And I think that is pretty much how Yomi works. The game is sold in several different forms. One form is in what's called the Complete First Edition. And this is like the full set of the entire game. You get 10 of these decks of cards.
All 10.
You also will get 2 player mats. And these are kind of like mouse pad quality. You know, if you've ever seen like Magic Pro players have these player mats, mm-hmm. 2 of those, and you get some little plastic gems to mark your life on the player mat. It all comes together in a very, very nice box. And so that I think that retails for $100.
A little steep.
So, I mean, if you really bought into this game and you want to, you know, play a lot of it, then that's a good thing to get. Otherwise, I think that you can buy 2 deck packs for $25,
which and these are two opponents that are pretty well matched against each other.
Yeah, and so that's a way that you can try out the game and see if it's something that might be for you. So that's Yomi. Cody, what did you think of this game?
It was interesting because I didn't think that could be the genre of the 2D fighter, the Street Fighter thing, could be pulled off in a game, and I think this is probably one of the best ways you could do it. My worries would be, and I guess I don't know if I would break this down into a bi-tried or not sort of a thing, but I'm kind of worried if you don't know, if you don't have that background of those games, that the learning curve may be a lot higher and honestly may not make a lot of sense to you.
Yeah.
But I think the games that I've played, everything has been really tightly balanced. And the artwork's pretty neat on it, and I think it's a good system. You can tell a lot of work has been put into it, and I think it's a good first effort.
Yeah, I agree. I think the theme is very well kind of interlaced through the mechanics of the game because of all the special abilities and mm-hmm. things that you can do. Like, there's one deck in there that's like a gambling panda bear.
Oh, yeah.
And all of his special abilities have to do with, like, dice rolling and playing poker hands. And I think one of his final moves is called Blackjack.
Yeah.
And so you can, you can just sort of see that theme played out. So I really like it as well. I mean, if we're going to talk about, like we say on our show, buy points, try points, and deny points, one buy point is definitely the artwork. I think the artwork is very, mm-hmm. very well done on all these cards. The quality of the cards is good playing card quality. They're not linen finished or anything like that. So, if you get a lot of play out of them, you may want to sleeve them. The one downside about that is if you sleeve the cards, they're probably not going to fit back into the box that you would normally get with them. But you can always find a different storage solution for a game like this. If you get the whole set, then I think you can play pretty much a whole tournament if you wanted to of this, mm-hmm. or have a whole game day and just give everybody a different deck and have them check it out. So. I think it's just pricey. I think that's one downside.
Yeah, I think it's a little too pricey.
Yeah, if you play $25 for two decks of cards, that's, you're going to have to like the game a whole lot. And then once you buy that $25 two decks of cards and you decide you like the game and want to buy the whole thing, well, then that's another $100 and plus you're basically rebuying two decks over again. Yep. So I'm not sure how that model exactly plays out. But I think the game is a lot of fun. I think that... it's deceivingly strategic.
Yeah.
I think it seems like rock, paper, scissors, that's not going to be that interesting. But you can really shape what is in your hand and what kind of combos that you have and, going and getting those aces and everything. You can set things up several turns in advance, And then, of course, at the end of the day, you could still get beaten out by, the rock, paper, scissors thing. But, but that's kind of part of the fun of a fighting game, I think.
No.
The word yomi, we mentioned that we both took some Japanese. The word yomi means reading. And so what you're trying to do in this game is you're trying to read the other opponent and try to figure out, what might they be playing. And you have a limited ability to do that, but I think that it really implements it pretty well. So I think it's a really good one. I think it's kind of a try before you buy if you're able to. If your local game store might have a couple of decks where you could, sit down at a table and check it out. I've played this at lunch with some friends of mine who were kind of Magic the Gathering players, and they both really enjoyed it.
Mm.
And so I think that would be one. It's a quick one. I think just before we started this podcast, Cody and I played a game. Took about 20 minutes.
Yeah, 15, if that.
Yeah, it's pretty quick. So we would invite you to definitely check out this great new game from Sirlin Games, Yomi.
All right, well, that wraps up another searing episode of Game On with Cody and John.
Burning hot.
Indeed. We want to let you know that the next episode will be our big kind of Gen Con info dump, Gen Con recap, if you will. So we will be delayed by about a week or two, depending on... it should come out the week after Gen Con.
Yeah, week after Gen Con, mm-hmm. we'll record and release that show. So, and we'll be fresh from the convention, so we'll have lots of great information for you, I'm sure.
That's right.
All of our stories and stuff.
I love my stories.
I love the stories, man. Wayne's going to tell you all the great ways that you can get in touch with us. We would invite you to go check out things like Twitter and Facebook. I want to kind of talk up our Facebook page. Cody does a real good job of posting things on that and via his Apple product.
That's right.
And so pictures of games that we're playing and that kind of stuff. So Facebook and Twitter is the best way during the week, I guess, when we're not releasing a show, for you to find out kind of what we're playing and get our opinions on things, if that matters to you. But we'd love for it to connect with you that way. You can always check out GameOnPodcast.com, where we have all the information, about our show and about our great sponsor, Myriad Games, and other podcasts that we are affiliated with. We also have a donation button if you'd like to financially support the show. We would always appreciate that. You can click on that and do the PayPal thing. But that is about all we've got for this episode. We love making this podcast for you, listeners. And until next time,
game on.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games, on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on BoardGameGeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Game On Podcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on PulpGamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On!